Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the new Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and the Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you, it's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church.
No matter what we choose to believe, there's no God who condones taking the life of an innocent human being.
Where I think we are in the culture, but also with religious institutions, is that people have stopped hating us, that is to say LGBT people, but they're not yet ready to celebrate us. That's the next big work to do.
Maybe it's something as simple as you whistle while you work.
Just whistle while you work.
Mega churches are a house of cards. Mega churches really are the primary example of what's wrong with evangelicalism, why it's so thin, so insubstantial, so unsatisfying.
Southern Illinois truck drivers, love issues, etc.
Well, the president spoke recently to our school children, and many objected. Should they have objected? And those who didn't, why didn't they? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Friday afternoon, September the 11th. We're going to begin talking to Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service about Barack Obama's back-to-school address, a controversy surrounding the late Senator Kennedy's graveside service, and Roman Catholics and health care reform. Then Greg Smith is going to join us from the Pew Forum to talk about a new survey on how Americans view Muslims. Then we'll play Issues Etc., soundbite of the week. Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes a weekly column for Scripps Howard called On Religion. He's author of the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
There's a local St. Louis angle on the Obama's address to school children here, namely Craig Durham of Westminster Christian Academy. He is quoted, I think writing to some parents of the school, saying, at some point, Christians have got to stop putting the mental in fundamentalist and start interacting with the world. What is he saying there?
Well, first of all, he didn't write that to the parents. He posted that on a blog, on his blog, which is read by all kinds of people, but he didn't target the parents at his school with that comment. In other words, I said it was in an online commentary. So he was aiming that just kind of at the evangelical world, not, you know, specific parents. But there's no question what he was reacting to, which was kind of the vibes, you know, that he was getting in terms of parents, et cetera. And he was reading a bunch of stuff on the web. First of all, it's really wonderful to be able to bump into people like Dunham on the web, people I would have not heard about. I was not going to write about this subject until I read his remarks, which was on one blog, which led to another blog, which led to another blog. And then that chased me off to the very interesting quotes by Piper and Al Mohler and others who are having very similar feelings. What he's saying is that you cannot even take part in a debate if you are not respectfully listening to the arguments of someone you're debating. You get it? So in this case, even if you're going to reject what Obama says, you, as a Christian, owe the office respect. You owe the man respect for his just for basic humanity in terms of civility. And even if you decide you cannot accept what he's saying in this case, how do you debate him unless you haven't calmed down and listened carefully to what he's saying? Does that make sense? So I thought the more meaningful quote, when I called him up and interviewed him, was him saying, I think these are the kinds of conversations parents should be praying that their children are having in the context of a Christian school. If you can't discuss these issues in the context of a Christian school, where in the world could you do that? Where could you raise the questions, you know, that you should raise? So to some degree, he's just making a case for apologetics.
How have we gotten to the point here, Terry, not only culturally but also with respect to the way Christians interact with the culture, that a president says, I would like to make an address, and I think it turned out to be a pretty bland address altogether. I'd like to make an address to America's school children. And parents said, not to my child. I'm not going to send my kid to school that day.
Well, of course, it's all about social issues. It's about moral and social issues and the degree to which conservative Christians feel cut off from this administration. I think it's handy, though, to back up and realize that while there were mild controversies about speeches to school children across the nation by Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush, there were mild controversies on the left when they did that, saying that it was free advertising, free campaigning, et cetera, some of the same charges leveled at Obama. I think it's intriguing to note that George W. Bush didn't even attempt to do this, even though at the time of the education reform package, it would have made sense for him to do it, because Bush knew that his personality and his opponents would be so fierce that it would destroy what he was trying to do or distract from it. Now, it's a measure of Obama's self-confidence, quite frankly, that he just hauled off and did it anyway, or that his staff either didn't anticipate it or they decided that, you know, it was going to be good in the long run, because when people attacked him this wildly, it would only make them look bad.
You quote a regular guest on this program, Dr. Albert Mohler of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. What did he have to say about all of this?
Well, I mean, first of all, he was highly critical of the kind of how do you plan to help the president materials that came out from the Education Department in support of the speech. So he was critical of some of the framing of the speech. But in terms of the actual contents of the speech, he said pretty much the same thing. What in the world has it come to when we can't let a president of the United States, the father of two children, from an intact home, no rumors of, you know, moral problems or anything that, stand up in front of our children and tell them to turn off the TV, turn off the Xbox, and go read a book, you know, and listen to your parents, respect your parents, respect your teachers. Your future depends on your efforts. I mean, you know, name me a recent conservative political leader who wouldn't have wanted to give that speech.
So in the end, do you think that the president's message got through in spite of the early, the prior objections and the objections afterwards?
Sure. I mean, you know, most people, I mean, especially when you consider the public school audience, I don't think those are the kind of people that are listening to conservative Christian niche media anyway. Now, the more interesting thing to me is whether some people might do what Craig Dunham said he was going to do, which is take clips from the speech right straight into his biblical ethics class and talk about them. And in particular, I know it was something I didn't have room for in the column I write, since it's so strictly formatted. But in particular, he was intrigued to know if many Christian parents, are more comfortable with their children sitting in their bedrooms with doors closed, watching Gossip Girls and the latest HBO vampire special series, than they are watching the President of the United States talk about discipline at school. What does that say?
Commending you and the members of your family to the loving intervention of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the Holy Father cordially imparts his apostolic blessing as a pledge of wisdom, comfort, and strength in the Lord.
That's Cardinal McCarrick at the graveside service for the late Senator Ted Kennedy, reading from a letter from Pope Benedict to the late senator, pronouncing what sounds an awful lot, Terry, like a papal blessing, was it?
Well, I mean, it's pretty standard. And also notice, anytime you're dealing with the Vatican, you're dealing with layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of symbolism. So the fact that this comes from a papal aide, not directly from the Pope, when it comes in response to a personal letter from Ted Kennedy, the Pope, you know, is there a layer of meaning there? We also do not know what the rest of the letter said. And I think it's interesting that McCarrick, who very close friend of Ted Kennedy and someone who once kind of set on a pretty clear Vatican directive from a cardinal by the name of Joseph Ratzinger, who less than a year later becomes Benedict XVI, McCarrick is a close friend of Kennedy, and he read all of Kennedy's letter, but he only read sections of the papal letter. So we don't know what's in the rest of the papal letter. We also, it's very clear if you follow the details of this, there was, I couldn't see any grounds whatsoever to deny Ted Kennedy a Catholic funeral. And very, very few conservative Catholics thought there were. There were lots of conservative Catholics who thought that the funeral should have either A, have been private, or B, should not have been allowed. I mean, perhaps with the cardinal not taking part in it, the cardinal of Boston, or perhaps that it shouldn't have been, you know, three eulogies, 2 hours long, five or six prayers that specifically talk about Ted Kennedy being in heaven and seeing his brothers and stuff like that. When at the funeral of Pope John Paul II, you have people being asked to pray for the Pope's soul and for his repose. You know what I'm saying? Why in the world does the funeral of Ted Kennedy need to be more theologically celebratory than the funeral of Pope John Paul II? Does that make sense?
When we come back from this break, we're going to be continuing our conversation with Terry Mattingly. I want to know about the tension. This is odd. How would he describe the tension between Roman Catholic teaching, the Roman Catholic Church and its teaching, and Roman Catholic lawmakers who, in some very important ways, disregard that teaching in the way that they govern? Or maybe it's not only about lawmakers alone. Terry Mattingly is our guest, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes a weekly column for the Scripps Howard News Service called On Religion. He's author of the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder of GetReligion.org. After about 10, 15 more minutes with Terry, we'll be talking with Greg Smith, senior researcher at the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life based in Washington, D.C., about a new survey on how Americans view Muslims and Islam. Then we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week with you this Friday afternoon, September the 11th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned. Village Lutheran Church in Ladue thanks God for his saving gift of faith through Christ and invites you to share in this gift by worshiping with us Sunday mornings at 8:15 or 10:45. We're conveniently located 1 mile west of the Galleria on Clayton Road. For more information, call 314-993-1834 or visit villagelutheranchurch.org. Village Lutheran Church, ordinary people loved by an extraordinary God. villagelutheranchurch.org.
Here's a new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking chelada, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Facebook.com/issuesetc.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Historic liturgy, cool. Liturgical dance, not cool. Kneeling for the Lord's body and blood on a Sunday morning, cool. Sitting in your theater-style seat with cup hole if you're a double mocha latte, not cool. We're the Brothers of John the Steadfast. If you're interested in traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice, check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
Faith in the death and resurrection of Jesus retains its unique character in the history of religions. It's not a copycat.
I hate Barack Obama. I'm not going to pray for his good. I'm going to pray that he dies and goes to hell.
When you're standing by the deathbed, to be able to say this is what God says, these are his promises, it's really that important and that central.
we can surely take a biblical stance on who God loves. God is looking at the merits of Jesus. We are saved by merit, but just not mine. It's through Jesus.
Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in 20 minutes. Right now we're talking to Terry Mattingly. He writes a weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. Terry, can you describe the tension between Roman Catholic teaching and the Roman Catholic lawmakers who disregard that teaching?
Well, it's all about two things, this entire story. One is that we're obviously dealing with divisions within the hierarchy of the American Catholic Church over how to deal with this. The second thing is at some point you have to stand back in humility and say, we don't know what Ted Kennedy said to his confessor on his deathbed in his final confession, right? And I hope no journalist out there is trying to find out what goes on between an individual human being and his or her priests and final confessions is between them and God. Now, that said, Kennedy's endorsement and advocacy of abortion was a 100 percentile rating, you know, from Narol. He was an outspoken opponent of the church's teachings on all aspects of sexual morality and science. So we're dealing here with the fact that some people believed he should not have been allowed to continue to take communion in a Catholic setting because he is, according to the Vatican, living, you know, a life in direct opposition to the what vital teachings of the church. And others, of course, are saying, no, we don't think it's that big an issue, or who are we to judge? So the most intriguing aspect of all of this to me, once again, is internal politics within the U.S., the American Catholic Church, and specifically among its bishops. That's really what this story is all about. It's not a story about Ted Kennedy.
Well, finally on that, what is your sense of American Catholicism? Is the protection of the unborn and the protection of life and its intrinsic value recognized in law until natural death, is this truly part of American Catholic fundamental teaching at this point?
I think you'd have to say that that's open to dispute. But I will back off for a second and remind, I think you and I have discussed this before. At getreligion.org, I'm constantly talking about that there are different kinds of voters. All the time, the press is always talking about American Catholicism as if it was all one thing, or they're constantly talking about the Catholic vote, singular, as if there's only one. At Get Religion, I'm always talking in terms of four different Catholic votes. Number one is the ex-Catholic vote, and there's no one in American politics to the left of the ex-Catholic vote. Second, you have the once or twice a year cultural marginal Catholic. And I would assume at that point that that's a pretty culturally and morally liberal crowd as well. The third group you have is what could be called the normal Sunday morning American Catholic. And that's the swing vote that everybody talks about being the crucial factor in American politics. The normal goes to church on Sunday morning American Catholic, and the degree to which that person is now truly Catholic or has become some sort of honorary liberal Protestant, that's really the fight. The fourth group of Catholic is what one Catholic priest here in Washington once described to me as the goes to confession and sweats the details Catholic. I have been known at Get Religion to call them pro-catechism Catholics. They believe the doctrines of the Catholic Church consistently. They practice confession as a part of their Eucharistic discipline. And that group may be as low as 10, at most 20% of American Catholics. I've never heard anyone make a case for it being more than 20. And you can say that if you look at confession statistics, it may be as low as 5% of American Catholics. So that's what this is all about. What is the Catholic Church in the United States, and what does it teach? And there's no evidence that the bishops are in agreement, and certainly there's no evidence that the people are in agreement.
Well, speaking of the bishops, you've written recently about a booklet at the Department of Veterans Affairs called Your Life, Your Choices. Tell us the story of that booklet, and now what are some ongoing concerns by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops?
Well, that's a fascinating thing just in terms of health care. That brings us to Obama's speech last night, which I have not carefully dissected. But, you know, the section where he talked about, you know, those of you who are talking about death panels and all that, it's all just lies. And then there are other things that we're going to straighten out, too. When he says that in the context of what you're saying is lying, he says there is no money in this in the bills that I'm endorsing that would go for abortion. When the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference staff and many others have come right out and said, clearly, the bills do contain money for abortion. So to some degree, the president just called the U.S. Bishops Conference liars. And that's an interesting thing. He's also calling a bunch of Democrats liars because there's an entire coalition of pro-life and conservative Democrats who want a vote on the Hyde Amendment to straighten this issue out once and for all. And they're saying that there's language in the bill that will lead to tax dollars for abortion. And so Obama called them liars last night, too. That's intriguing and a story that journalists need to be following up on. What you're talking about with the VA thing is something that's actually from the Bush administration, which was this pamphlet was formed to help veterans make end-of-life directives decisions. And what was interesting about the pamphlet is it only recommended one group in terms of providing guidance for end-of-life decisions. It was a group called Compassion and Choices. And as I put in my column, you have to trace that back enough to know that in 2005, Compassion and Choices was created through the merger of two groups, Compassion in Dying and End-of-Life Choices. Then it helps to know that the organization End of Life Choices, before 2003, was previously known as, drumroll, the Hemlock Society. And that was in the Bush years. Well, that pamphlet is now back online at the VA.org. They've taken out the Hemlock Society reference. But a lot of people are using this as an indication that if there is going to be some sort of independent panel, which Obama talked about in a frank interview with the New York Times interview, I believe it was in the spring, I think it was in April, that language about there's going to have to be a conversation guided by doctors, scientists, and ethicists. There's going to have to be a very difficult democratic conversation that takes place about how to control health care for the elderly. That's what gets warped into discussions of death panels, but mainly, you do have people, including the U.S. Catholic bishops, who are scared that if the government gets involved in helping people make these decisions, who is the government going to turn to for advice?
Finally, on a related subject, the president does want reform. He was very clear about that when he gave his speech to the joint session of Congress. And he has said that those who have raised objections, not only about end of life, but also about abortion in health care reform, are demagoguing the issue. Some have simply said, let's have an explicit statement in the healthcare reform bill that would exclude abortion. Do you expect the president to endorse that kind of safeguard in order to get healthcare reform through?
I don't know, but it's very interesting to notice how long even people on the left have been asking him to do that. We are 6, 7, 8, 9 months after the writing of columns by the likes of E.J. Dion Jr. of the Washington Post and Jim Wallace of Sojourners, very blatantly asking the president not to abandon the pro-life left on this issue. And right now I'm fascinated because all of the debates that matter right now have nothing to do with the GOP. All of the debates that matter right now are inside the Democratic Party, and it's between pro-life Democrats and fiscally conservative Democrats and the leadership of the House and Senate. There's a bunch of stuff that's going to pass Nancy Pelosi in the House that's never going to make it through the Senate. And it seems to me that this is a rare chance for journalists to admit that there's a small amount of diversity in that Democratic Party, but right now those are the votes that count. So I'm looking forward to what should be some detailed and interesting coverage of morally conservative Democrats and fiscally conservative Democrats in the weeks ahead.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes a weekly column for Scripps Howard News Service called On Religion. He's author of the book Pop Goes Religion and founder of GetReligion.org. You can read Terry's column and purchase his book Pop Goes Religion under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Terry, thank you for being our guest.
You betcha.
When we come back, Greg Smith will be with us. He's from the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life based in Washington, D.C. They have a new survey out, very interesting, on how Americans view Muslims and Islam. And I think it's appropriate for today, on this day in American history, September the 11th, 8 years out from the terrorist attacks, to ask those kind of questions and to see where the American people are on Islam and Muslims among us. Then, soundbite of the week with you for the last half hour of Issues Etc. Stay tuned.
These days, value affords me a new attitude. It lets me appreciate that I can start my day with more than a $6 cup of coffee, and that I officially have permission to skip dinner out to spend time talking with my family over Casserole Inn. Concordia Publishing House offers Christian products that help me focus on what matters most. Visit any of the three Concordia bookstores downtown, in Kirkwood, and on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton, or shop online at cph.org and find out what a new value attitude looks like in your life.
Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the new Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and the Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you, it's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you. Issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
One book emphasizes forgiveness.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Can you imagine 40 million children leaving heaven and returning to earth? That's the scene depicted in a new pro-life novel, Return of the Children. In the book, children visit the homes of the parents who aborted them, but they aren't seeking vengeance. They come with messages of love and forgiveness, assuring the parents that God will forgive them for their abortion. 60,000 children visit the abortionist who killed them with the same message. Author John Regan said he wanted to highlight an often neglected aspect of the abortion issue, forgiveness for those who seek it.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.